What is the link between hormones and brain power? What effect does sugar have on the brain? And can worrying be a positive thing? We'll get into all this and more, plus practical applications for integrating brain science into your life and work. Welcome to The Keys to Brain Change with Dr. Daniel Amen and Dr. Ruth Buzinski.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Dr. Ruth Buzinski, a licensed psychologist in the state of Connecticut and the president of the National Institute for the Clinical Application of Behavioral Medicine. We've got a packed agenda. My guest is Dr. Daniel Amen. He, many of you know, but in case this could be your first time, he's a physician and double board certified as a psychiatrist. He has written 8 New York best-selling books, New York Times best-selling books. Change Your Brain, Change Your Body is one of the ones that I remember spending a lot of time with. And lately, he's very recently come up with Unleash the Power of the Female Brain. He is also the founder of the Amen Clinics, which are throughout the United States at this point. So, Daniel, welcome back. It's good to see you again, my friend. And as I said, let's jump right in.
Hi, Ruth. Pleasure to be with you.
Thanks. So, you've been focusing an awful lot on the female brain. Why the focus there? What made you go in that direction?
Well, I have 5 sisters, 3 daughters, 14 nieces. But, you know, I've had that for most of my life. We did a big project at Saddleback Church, one of the largest churches in the world, a couple of years ago. And we had 15,000 people sign up for our health program. And 85% of them were women. And initially, wow, that really upset me because I'm thinking, you know, men should be the leaders of their family, but clearly they're not when it comes to their health. And so I really wanted to write a book to women to, one, honor them for their leadership abilities, and two, get them really healthy, because I know if they can get healthy, that their kids will, their husbands will, and we need a revolution in this country when it comes to both our physical and mental health. And women are going to lead the revolution. So it was really a book for them.
Okay. And we're going to talk at the end. I do want to kind of circle back and get a little bit of an update on the Saddleback Project and also on the NFL Project if we've got time. I've checked in with you from time to time on those two projects, and it's always exciting to hear about the latest. But right now, let's focus on the female brain. And to start with, I guess I'd like to ask you, females and males are born with a different brain, or when do they start to diverge?
Day 21.
In gestation.
Gestation. So it happens really quickly. So day 21 is when the brain starts to form, and they're forming differently in males and females. And it happens because of the presence or lack of estrogen, that estrogen wires the brain differently. And we did a study of 46,000 scans. The Amen Clinics, that's what we do. We do imaging. And over the last 22 years now, we have a database of 85,000 scans. And when we put them into a research format and then began to look at what's the differences, it was so interesting. Women have busy brains compared to males. In about 80% of the brain, women have more blood flow and more activity, especially in their frontal lobes and in an area called the cingulate gyrus. And it turns out to be really interesting that female brains are actually wired for their strengths, empathy, intuition, collaboration, self-control, and appropriate worry. So when I was looking at our data results, I went, you know, it so fits with my experience. You know, women go to jail 14 times less than males. Why? Because they have better judgment. Overall, they have better self-control. And isn't it interesting, the front part of your brain is called the executive part of the brain, forethought, judgment, impulse control, organization, planning, forethought. And it's stronger in women. And why aren't women more executives? And, you know, that may be because they're better at taking care of children than men are, by and large. My wife always says if men raise children, there'd be fewer of them because they'd get hurt more often. But women are really wired for leadership. At least that's one of the big takeaways from our work. But the other thing they're wired for, which I think is a strength, but many people don't, is worry.
Okay, now let's get into a little bit of the neuroanatomy. When you say they're wired for leadership or wired for worry, what parts of the brain and how can we contrast it a little bit with, well, if you looked at a male brain, how would it be different?
So leadership, the prefrontal cortex, so it's the front third of the brain. If you look in most neuropsychiatry or neuropsychology textbooks, they'll list the prefrontal cortex as the executive part of the brain, as the CEO, if you will, part of the brain. Forethought, judgment, planning, impulse control, learning from your mistakes. And it's clearly more active in women, clearly. The cingulate gyrus, which is just such a stinking interesting part of the brain, is involved with error detection. So knowing when something is wrong. It's also involved in shifting your attention. So being able to go from thought to thought or idea to idea, being flexible, going with the flow. Clearly more active in females. It's highly statistically significant in our massive data set.
And are you saying the cingulate gyrate, both the male and the female have that part of the brain? It's bigger or more blood flow to it?
So what we look at in our research is blood flow and activity, so how active a certain part of the brain is. And the cingulate is much more active in females than in males. Mm-hmm. And so they get the strengths of that, but when it's too active, usually due to decreases in the neurotransmitter serotonin. So according to a study from the Montreal Neurological Institute, women produce 52% less serotonin than men. And when serotonin goes low, the cingulate gyrus gets busy. And it explains so much a woman's vulnerability to depression, because low levels of serotonin have been associated with depression, and the most common antidepressants are medications that raise serotonin. Prozac, Paxil, Celexa, Lexapro, Zoloft, and so on. And I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. When the cingulate gyrus is really active, people have trouble shifting their attention, and so they can worry, hold grudges, things don't go their way, they get upset, and they detect more errors, which is why I love the cartoon where sort of an average-looking guy is looking in the mirror thinking to himself, wow, you're just amazing. Where a gorgeous woman is looking in the mirror, finding every fault that she has. And that's actually common. And it's because this error detection part of her brain works much harder than in most male brains.
So, and particularly when the serotonin level is low,
then the cingulate gyrus is high, and worry becomes part of the picture.
But antidepressants work to increase serotonin,
which lowers the cingulate gyrus. So it's a beautiful story, is that if women have less serotonin, they worry more, they have more depression. But what I argue in the book is worry is a good thing. In fact, according to one of the longest longevity studies ever done, the don't worry, be happy people, more often men on motorcycles, die the earliest from accidents or preventable illnesses. So you need a little worry because it keeps you on track. And if a man is married, he lives longer than a man who's not married. Why? Because his wife worries about him and pushes him to take better care of himself. Women don't get the same longevity boost from being married. In fact, in one study, women who are married actually lived less long or didn't live as long as the women who were single, which I just find very interesting. And what I used to think, my job as a psychiatrist, I don't know if you had this thought as a psychologist, but I used to think my job as a psychiatrist was to lower your anxiety level. And I totally don't believe that anymore. I think part of my job is to raise people's anxiety.
I would think there's a kind of a curvilinear, you know, like too much worry is probably counterproductive. Certainly it's counterproductive to performance. And too little worry is probably counterproductive, but there's maybe an optimal.
There's an optimal. And in our experience, women find that balance better than many men. And if you just think about it, women go to jail 14 times less than males. Why? Because they make better decisions. I mean, it's ultimately always about the decisions that you make in life that determines how successful you are, how your relationships go, how much money you make, and ultimately your health. And so you're right. Too much worry, that is clearly. So if we look at the strengths, empathy, intuition, collaboration, self-control, and worry, they're opposite sides of that. So empathy could be you take too much on. Collaboration means you try to get everybody involved and you can't make a decision. Self-control could turn into trying to control others. And the worry that is good, as you said, in small doses, can tear you up in large doses. And so in Unleash the Power of the Female Brain, it's like, here are your strengths, here are your vulnerabilities. Now, how do you optimize it? Because ultimately, that's always my goal, is to optimize people's brains, because when you do, you optimize their lives.
Now, I've got several questions I want to ask you about that, but before we do, I'd just like to continue with our task of contrasting the male and female brain. The male brain is larger than the female brain.
10%.
10%, okay. Females have a larger hippocampi.
Of course, they remember every bad thing you've ever done.
Now, Daniel.
It's true. And this study's actually been replicated multiple times by my friend Larry Cahill at UC Irvine. And her hippocampi, so these are these seahorse structures on the inside of your temporal lobes, are larger and more active on the left. So the left side is involved in detail. So they remember the first time that you kissed her and every bad thing your mother ever did to her. And so if you just think, you know, of your wedding, they remember every detail. where most guys know they got married sometime in the summer, you know, or maybe it was early fall. So it's just how we're wired. We're wired differently. But it's so interesting. Now, and these are sort of big generalizations.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
There are some guys who have brains that are wired just like female brains. And there are some girls that don't fit the pattern at all.
Right, there's a continuum here. And
if I look at my sisters and my daughters and my nieces, it seems to fit nicely.
And and for our audience, both Daniel and I know that not all relationships are heterosexual, and that this is going to play out in interesting ways, both for heterosexuals, where people's brains sometimes play off of the strengths that are usually attributed to the opposite sex, and also with gay couples. You get some interesting...
And there tends to be mixes, but even within, you know, gay couples, that there are some brains that tend to be more female, some more male, some in the middle. And many of the habits that people get into, like taking birth control pills, changes. It actually shifts the brain to take on a more male role if you're dropping estrogen on a regular basis. So it's really interesting. One of the longest chapters in the book is the chapter on hormones. And it's not just estrogen and progesterone, but there are other really important ones like cortisol and testosterone, DHEA. Because if your hormones aren't right, your brain's
right, right. And we're going to get to that. I just want to, men have a larger amygdalas, as well as hypothalamus and parietal lobes. How does I think pretty much everyone on the webinar knows the role of the amygdala, but let's just briefly talk about the hypothalamus and the parietal lobes.
So the hypothalamus is where a lot of hormones work, and many of them are produced. So your appetite, sleep-wake cycles, sexual feelings, it becomes really important. The part that is responsive to testosterone is 2.5 times larger in men, and that's why he's always thinking about sex. The parietal lobes are endlessly interesting as well, and they're involved in direction sense. And it's a running joke between my wife and I. She'll go, turn here, and I just totally won't listen because she has gotten me lost on many occasions. That males tend to be better at knowing how to get from point A to point B, but women are much better at knowing when they're lost. So she can admit problems a lot faster, which is why when people call the Amen clinics, we have 6 clinics around the country, 3 on the East Coast, 3 on the West Coast. 7 or 8 times out of 10, it's moms who call, or the wife who calls, or the daughter who calls. Because she gets it that there's a problem way before males do typically. And when, you know, mom calls and brings in her child, and if we can get the dad to come in, he is much more often in denial than mom is. And it's like, there's nothing the matter with this child. He's just like me when I was growing up, which is often the point because these things like ADD tend to run in families.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about white matter and gray matter in terms of men and women.
So it's actually really interesting when... men have bigger brains, as we talked about. But women, especially in the right hemisphere, have more white matter, which means they draw on multiple areas of the brain all at once. So men tend to be more compartmentalized. So they have more gray matter, but it's more localized gray matter. So women tend to be more intuitive, but they can't tell you why, which I think is a really, it's like, I don't like this person. It's like, well, why? Well, I can't explain it, but I don't like this person. But intuition, you want to pay attention to it. It can often be right. It can often be helpful to you. Women have more gray matter in the language centers of their brain on both sides, which is, so men tend to be left-sided in their language centers for right-handed people. So if a man has a stroke in his left frontal lobes, he's likely to lose language. If women have a stroke in her left frontal lobe, she's less likely because the right side may pick it up.
Okay. So let's go to hormones and talk about that. The hormones are, both the male and the females have some of the same hormones, but they're vastly different in degree. Would that be right?
Right. So men have estrogen, not much. Women have a lot more. Progesterone is really important. I think for this conversation, the things to know are that, so if we think of estrogen as that hormone that not only helps your sex organs function properly, it also dramatically helps your brain. In that when estrogen levels go low at the end of a menstrual cycle or during perimenopause or menopause, there are a lot of cognitive issues that go along with that as well. I think of progesterone as the brain's natural Valium, that it sort of soothes you and relaxes you. When progesterone levels go low, and most people don't know this, they start to go low 10 years before you go into menopause. So maybe around 38 or 40 or 42, all of a sudden women can't sleep, they're anxious, they're more irritable, and then they start reaching for benzos, sleeping pills, or alcohol. And a little natural progesterone can often make a very big difference in sort of settling things down for the female brain. Progesterone is also protective. There's new research showing that it's been used in people who have traumatic brain injury, that it can enhance healing. So they tend to be just two incredibly important hormones for women. But what often gets ignored in women is testosterone. Testosterone is also critical, not only for libido, so we typically think of it involved in libido, but it's also involved in strength, mood, and memory. And as testosterone goes low, and we're having sort of a crisis in this country on, some people think of it as vitamin T. And one of the reasons, you know, what's the most significant cause of low testosterone levels? It's obesity. And obesity, chronic stress, and sugar. If you get a sugar burst, it drops your testosterone levels by 25%. So I was reading this study that showed that, and I looked to my wife and I said, if couples share the cheesecake at the restaurant, no one gets dessert when they get home because they both drop their testosterone levels. And, you know, given that 2/3 of us are overweight, 1/3 of us are obese, I mean, that's going to cause a terrible sexual problem in our country.
So what do you understand about that? Just that as you take in sugar, the testosterone goes down?
So if you take sugar, your testosterone levels drop by 25% according to one study. And your memory, mood, energy, motivation, strength are going to go down along with your libido. So watching what you put in your mouth is really important. And women, especially when they get into their 40s and 50s, their libido really drops because their testosterone level drops. And that can get them divorced because all of a sudden they want their husbands to leave them alone. And their husband, you know, his testosterone maybe didn't go down with hers. And so all of a sudden he's paying attention to things he shouldn't be paying attention to. And nobody really is thinking about, you know, most marital therapists are never trained in hormone balancing. And so they don't realize you got to do that in order for this couple's relationship to thrive.
And it's not just libido, though. Testosterone is critical for just feeling good, like feeling like it's a good day.
Right, for memory, mood, motivation, energy. But, you know, the problem with testosterone, you know, I just find this endlessly interesting. If you go to your doctor and he puts you on a testosterone cream and you're a woman, you begin to think more like a guy. And it drops your empathy. And if you're raising like two teenagers and you don't have the same level of empathy you had 3 months earlier when you weren't on testosterone, you're not going to be the same person with the kids. And that's going to have a negative impact on the kids because they're going to like, well, what did I do? What happened to you? Why don't you want to listen to me anymore? And so I like to sort of balance them naturally first before I go off to, you know, giving people hormones. So maybe we'll use pre-hormones like DHEA. And I've seen it dramatically increase testosterone, but without the sort of negative effects of over-sexualizing someone or decreasing their empathy.
So how much DHEA are you thinking of?
Well, you know, it always depends. I always say you can't change what you don't measure. So you always should be checking DHEA levels, testosterone levels, estrogen, progesterone levels. And another really important thing, and thing that'll surprise most people, because we've sort of made cholesterol the enemy. You don't want a high cholesterol level? Well, all your sex hormones are made from cholesterol. And so if your cholesterol is high and your doctor puts you on a statin and lowers them, under 160 has been associated with depression, aggression, and suicide. And if you add stress in there, well, how do you make stress hormones like cortisol? They come from cholesterol. So if you have low cholesterol levels and you're stressed, you have no material left over to make estrogen, progesterone, or testosterone. And so learning how to manage your cholesterol, and for me it means we should be eating fat-based diets. I'm a total fan of healthy fats, salmon, avocados, nuts, green leafy vegetables, healthy oils like coconut oil, grapeseed oil, olive oil, macadamia nut oil. Your brain is 60% fat. So the solid weight of your brain is mostly fat. It's like you have this ball of fat between your ears. 30 years ago, the dietary recommendations changed to low-fat diets. Well, what did they replace the fat with? Sugar. And you see, if you look at a map of the United States in 1982, not one state had more than 15% of people obese. Now every single state, more than 15% of people are obese. It was the biggest scam in the health history of our country, that fat was not the problem. Sugar is the problem. And if you have a carbohydrate-based diet, you have four times the risk of Alzheimer's disease. So if you just think carbohydrates, sugar, pasta, bread, potatoes, rice, if they're primary in your diet, you really want to rethink that. People who have fat-based diets, 42% less risk than the general population of getting Alzheimer's disease. If you have a protein-based diet, 21% less risk. Immediately, we should be changing our diet to, I think if you think of a plate, think of it as 70% plant-based foods, 30% clean, high-quality protein, and then on top of that, add healthy fats. That's the right diet. If you want to keep your brain and your body lean and young and smart, you got to get rid of the simple carbohydrates. I call them the high glycemic, low fiber carbohydrates. So, and it's not hard. You just have to be focused on it, but you'll think better, you'll feel better, your hormones will be better. And so many things that people think are health food, like rice cakes, they're totally not health foods. They're death foods. Or orange juice, your kids, drink your apple juice in the morning and we feel like we're doing something good for them. We're totally doing bad things.
So what do you have for breakfast in the morning?
I'm not traveling today, so I have just a great protein shake. So protein powder, a cup of berries or cherries. I put spinach and kale in it along with my vitamin D, and it's 240 calories. It's perfect for me.
And when you are?
And when I travel, I usually bring protein powder with me. I'll go get a couple of eggs. I always carry nuts with me. People who eat a lot of nuts live longer than those who don't. So even though my first imaging clinic was on a place called Nut Tree Road, some of my psychiatric patients took issue with that. But that's a famous it's a famous street where I lived. But it turned out to be prophetic in that nuts are really good for your brain.
Now, I also read in your book that testosterone protects the nervous system and can somewhat ward off cognitive impairment, depression, and Alzheimer's disease. I was surprised about the Alzheimer's disease.
Well, it's interesting. Hormones are intimately involved in brain protection, estrogen and testosterone. And when they go low, women and men with testosterone have more cognitive problems. So protecting your testosterone is critical, but don't overshoot it because then you're going to be thinking like a guy.
Okay. All right. Now, one of the things we didn't mention with progesterone was that normal levels can support GABA, and I don't think everyone on the call will know what GABA, why that matters. So can we have just a little bit of explanation about why GABA is so important?
GABA is just critical. So, the brain works through many neurotransmitters. It works through ones that are stimulating, like glutamate, and calming or inhibiting, like GABA. So think of one as the gasoline, the other as the brake. And you need both in order for your brain to work right. But too much glutamate actually causes the brain cells to commit suicide. It's this very interesting term called apoptosis. And excitotoxins, so think diet soda and artificial sweeteners, can stimulate too much glutamate, which then causes trouble for you. If you don't have enough GABA, then your brain can't settle itself. And progesterone supports the healthy function of GABA, which is why it sort of works as a natural relaxant. And when it goes low, that's when women have more problems with a busy brain. So a little natural progesterone can be ever so helpful.
More so than diet, any kind of dietary intervention or supplement?
Well, I'm a fan of using all of it. But I think if I had a 42-year-old woman in front of me and she's complaining that she can't sleep, she's irritable, and anxious, that a little natural progesterone would be the first thing I'd be thinking about. Now, there are supplements, and we make them. I have really shifted my practice in the last 20 years to really start with supplements first. And so supplements that support GABA, you can take GABA. You can take something called L-theanine from green tea. You can also take Relora, which helps block cortisol, or this very interesting one called holy basil, which is an adaptogen. Or one of my favorites is magnesium. 80% of the population is low in magnesium. If you have muscle twitches that just won't go away, or you have restless leg syndrome at night, the first thing to do is not take drugs for it. It's to take magnesium for it. If 80% of us are low in it, you know, maybe most people should be supplementing it, or at least eating foods like spinach that have a higher level of it.
And magnesium is also associated with some kind of tranquility?
Right. It helps to boost GABA and settles down nerve cell function.
Cortisol, we've touched on it just a little bit, but let's go into it a little more. How's it made, and what makes, what levels, what happens when it's too high or too low?
Well, when it's too high, it starts to kill cells in your hippocampus. So when you're under a lot of stress, so cortisol is our stress hormone. Really important if you have an acute stress, like your building's on fire, and it'll activate you to get the heck out of there. If you have an acute infection, it will be very helpful to you. Long term, though, it prematurely ages your brain. It kills cells in the memory centers, the hippocampus. It'll also begin to store fat on your belly. So dealing with the chronic stress you have is very important.
So that's why too much stress can make you put on belly fat. It's the cortisol link.
It's the cortisol link. And we actually have something we make called Everyday Stress Relief that has something in it called Relora that blocks cortisol that has been found to help people lose weight, just by decreasing the anxiety. And it really does it through two mechanisms. One is it blocks cortisol. The other, if you're less anxious, you're not likely to be eating because you're anxious.
Let's talk about thyroid.
So important. Oh my goodness. You know, think of thyroid like your body's idol. It sets your body's idol so it works properly. When thyroid is low, everything is slow. You think slow, your energy's low, you become constipated, your skin is dry, your hair starts to fall out, your eyes are dry. When thyroid's too high, it's like everything's revved too high. You have diarrhea, muscle cramps, anxiety. You can have depression either way. And it is off in a very high percentage of women. And one of the reasons may be the toxins in our environment, but also eating foods filled with antibiotics and hormones. It just seems like we're having more thyroid problems than ever before. And if you have any problems with your weight, with your hair falling out, or with your mood, you should have your thyroid checked. And a lot of doctors, if you're in the normal range, they won't do anything about it. But, you know, for me, I never wanted to be at the bottom of any of my classes, and I never want my patients to be at the bottom of normal range unless they're fine. If they're not fine, then I'm going to get them to high normal. And another hormone we haven't talked about yet, it's actually got a funny name for a hormone, but it's called vitamin D. Vitamin D is not just a vitamin, it's a hormone. And it works virtually everywhere in your body. 2/3 of the United States is low in it. It's a universal risk factor for disease. It's associated with MS, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, hypertension, depression, and dementia. And when I read the first study about the dinosaur syndrome, it's a term I coined a number of years ago. There are 140 studies now that say as your weight goes up, the size and function of your brain goes down. It's like, well, that should scare the fat off anyone. And so one day I thought up the term, the dinosaur syndrome, you know, big body, little brain, you're going to become extinct. And that was so rude, I thought, don't ever say that out loud. And but anyways, I started writing about it and talking about it. And so many people have lost massive amounts of weight because they didn't want to be a dinosaur.
Right.
But when I read that first study, it was from the University of Pittsburgh that did MRI scans on healthy weight, overweight, and obese people. If you're overweight, you have a BMI between 25 and 30. So it's body mass index. It's just basically your height versus your weight. Between 25 and 30, you had 4% less brain tissue, and your brain looked 8 years older than healthy people. If you were obese, which means you had a BMI over 30, you had 8% less brain tissue, and your brain looked 16 years older. And I'm like, holy smokes, that really got me motivated. And so I got my vitamin D level checked. Normal is between 30 and 100, and mine was 17. And I'm like, how's that possible? I live in Southern California. But I'm not outside walking around in the sunshine. I'm working all day. And when vitamin D level is low, and this is really important, the hormone leptin that tells you to stop eating doesn't work in your hypothalamus. And when I jacked up vitamin D, I started taking 5,000 units a day, all of a sudden my appetite went away. And it was the first time that I could lose weight and keep it off. So I want everybody to know their important numbers. And one of them is, what's your vitamin D level? And if your doctor says it's normal, you want to go, what does that mean? And it's like, well, normal's 30 to 100, yours is 33. See, in my mind, if I was having trouble losing weight or I was getting sick a lot, I would want to get it toward 100. I want to be at the top of my class, not at the bottom of my class. And the same thing goes with thyroid, testosterone, DHEA, because I want my ranges optimal, not normal. Because if you look at what's normal in the United States, it's not anything I want to be.
So what is an optimal number for, say, let's say testosterone? Or,
well, for men, it's, so normal is between 300 and 1100, and I like to have my guys at 700 or 800. I think that's where they feel the best. For women, it can be anywhere from 20 to 80, and I would prefer that they were at 50, 60, 70.
Speaking of the dinosaur brain, I'd like to segue into the Saddleback Project, because I know that you kind of put it into a soundbite, and many times we respond, as politicians know far too well, we respond to sound bites, but I think to some extent your coining of the term the dinosaur brain had a way of instigating the project at Saddleback. I'd like you to just tell us really briefly the story and then give us an update, because we've been curious, we've been following you with this.
Well, it's been so much fun. So in the summer of 2010, I had just finished my second book on the connection between physical health and emotional health. And it was a Sunday morning, and I was really happy I was done with the book. And I looked to my wife and I said, come on, let's go to church. And we went to a church by our house. And I said, why don't you drop Chloe? That was our 6-year-old at the time. At Children's Church, I'll go save us seats. And as I walked toward the sanctuary, I saw hundreds of donuts for sale for charity. Now, I've been going to church since I was 4 years old, but that day really upset me. I'm like, why is the church in the business of ruining people's health? And then right on the other side of the donuts was bacon and sausage they were cooking on the grill, and then hundreds of hot dogs they were cooking for after church. And I'm thinking of all the bad ingredients and all of these things. And as I sat down, the minister started talking about the ice cream festival they had the night before. And that just did it. It completely sent me over the top. And I prayed that service. And this is going to sound really crazy coming from a psychiatrist. I prayed that God would use me to change the culture of food at church, because the church was actually sending people to heaven early. It's not the plan. And I remember just being so upset. And after that prayer, 2 weeks later, Rick Warren called me. He's the senior pastor at Saddleback Church, one of the largest churches in the world. And he said, I saw you on public television talking about the dinosaur syndrome. He said, I don't want to be a dinosaur. He said, I was never going to get healthy for my heart. I didn't care. He said, to live longer, I don't care. I'm going to heaven. And to be sexier, he said, I'm already sexy. So, but when I heard you say, as your weight goes up, the size of your brain goes down, okay, you had me. Because he realized that was his influence came from the health of his brain. So he also asked Mark Hyman and Mehmet Oz. So the three of us created the Daniel Plan, which is the health program for Saddleback Church, launched January 15th, 2011. 15,000 people signed up. The first year, they lost 250,000 pounds. We are so excited. And it's a smart plan. It's really based on five pillars: faith, food, fitness, focus, which is really brain health, and friends. We get better together. And we have thousands of churches that are going to do this program around the world. And it's really our effort to get the world healthy through religious organizations. Now, you can also do it through schools, through your workplace, but the health of our society is clearly going the wrong way.
It's also through synagogues and mosques.
It's through any religious organization. And we've already had synagogues doing this in Detroit. So we don't think of it as a Christian plan. We think of it as a really smart health plan where you can get better where you worship. Too often churches are in the business of making people sick. And I say this tongue-in-cheek, but not really. The Bible Belt is widening. If you look at the Bible Belt in the United States, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, that is ground zero for obesity, heart disease, diabetes. And, you know, the only way we're really going to get to those people is through their churches. And you know McDonald's is going after our kids. I mean, you know it. Ronald McDonald, the Ronald McDonald House, Happy Meals. I'm not okay with leaving it to big corporations going after our kids. I totally think the Daniel Plan needs to go after our kids and plant this health program in preschools and schools and colleges, anywhere we can, because ultimately people get better together.
Daniel, we don't have a lot of time left, and I've got a few things I want to ask you. So I want to jump to the NFL project. We've heard so much about the NFL this year. For people, we have many, many people from over 50 countries on this webinar tonight. You might not know what the NFL is. It's the National Football League in the United States. You've been working with a lot of the retired football players. Any updates there?
Well, I think the most exciting news is everybody is out of the denial that they've been in for so long, and people recognize that it's a problem. Your brain is soft, your skull is hard. There's no getting around that it's just not a good idea to let children play contact sports that put their brains at the potential for repetitive injuries. So I think that's really exciting. The next phase of this is really going to be on rehabilitation. And we've been working hard on that. And it just does not apply to football players, but applies to the 2 million people in the United States every year who have brain injuries. So can we take damaged brain tissue and repair it? And the answer, cautiously, seems to be yes. In our football players, that 80% of them show cognitive improvement in a short period of time on a SMART program. So we're really excited about that. So out of denial into treatment, it's an exciting time.
That's so good to hear and very optimistic. I'm sorry we have to close. Daniel, I first want to just say I love your work, especially your latest books. You're really on a roll, prolifically producing fascinating work. And so it's great to check in with you and follow everything that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to be with you as always.
We hope you've enjoyed part one of this short, focused course. Next, in part two, we'll dig more deeply into the teaching you've just heard. This segment will help you synthesize key concepts so you can use them immediately. After that, you'll discover concrete strategies in part three for implementing this course in your life and with your patients. In part four, the Quick Start Guide, you'll get the core ideas and techniques at a glance so you'll have a cheat sheet when you need it most. And part five gives you the complete transcript of the course so you can quickly recall crucial details and apply them with confidence. You'll find the links for each of these on the confirmation page you received when you purchased the course. Thanks for watching.